It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
So hi, everybody. This is Martha McCallum, and welcome to the Untold Story podcast for this week. I'm thrilled to be joined by my friend, Brett Tolman. Brett, it's great to have you with us. And we're going to basically talk about two subjects today. We're going to talk about the Hunter Biden investigation and also this fascinating and tragic for many people collapse of Sam Bankman-Fried's FTX exchange on crypto, which I think is just confusing to a lot of people. And it could be what amounts to a serious crime as well. So all of this is within your background, white collar crime, former U.S. attorney. Yep. But I always like to do this at the top of the podcast. For those who don't know you, can you give us some background on you and what you've done and where you are right now in life?
Sure. Thanks, Martha. It's great to be with you. I come from a simple farming community, and you know, I guess my career has taken me all over the world unexpectedly. I went to law school. My father was a peace officer in California. He moved us all from California to Utah because he was worried about crime. And tragically and ironically, one of my sisters was kidnapped and raped in college. And I think it really sort of hit me hard. I was about 12 years old, and my father and I, we looked for the perpetrators, and there were a couple of them. She was on a college campus, and deeply affected our family. So I knew I would go into criminal law, and I wanted to put bad guys in jail. And so I did that. And for 25 years, I've been both a prosecutor and a defense attorney. I worked in the Senate for 4 years as chief counsel over crime and terrorism. President Bush made me the U.S. attorney. And the last case I would do, and my sister would help me on that case, was to prosecute the kidnapper of Elizabeth Smart. And so it felt like it was bookending, a very difficult but incredible chapter for me and my family. And my sister is, a wonderful, incredible human being, and went on to live an amazing, amazing life. But in that process, I realized that the criminal justice system is also very inadequate. It's broken in a lot of respects and needs a lot of work. And it's one that largely goes without accountability. And we're seeing that now with, all of the concerns about the FBI becoming political, the concerns over, who gets prosecuted and how. And so I guess that's now my life's mission is to, try to fix one part of our broken government.
That's an extraordinary story. I never knew that part of what inspired you to law enforcement, Brett. Were those perpetrators found, the people who attacked your sister?
There were three of them, students that may have come on campus. They after a dance that she was at, they chased her down and did a baseball slide into her legs. And, they put her in the car and they drove around, and every parent's, horrific nightmare. And then they talked about where they were going to dispose of the body. And they had pulled over to the side and was, I guess, throwing some trash into the gutter. And my sister kicked the front seat and elbowed the one sitting next to her and jumped out of the vehicle and ran. And my father had always told her to have a quarter, at least a quarter, so she could call. We didn't, no cell phones back then. So she had a quarter in her sock, and she went to a payphone outside of a convenience store. And my father and I, we went up there, and my dad drove around for days and days looking for a Trans Am, black Trans Am that they were driving. Something that obviously you never forget, and just devastated my sister for many, many years, took her away basically from us, for a period of time. I don't know how she got through it, but she did. And she went on to become, very, very powerful woman, very incredible. Got her master's degree in Washington and lives a beautiful life.
I'm so happy to hear that she has had a good life and that the strength of your family, I'm sure, was a huge part of pulling her through that. And I know you are very dedicated to your family. You know, it just makes me think about what happened in Idaho to these four young people. And that's a terrible mystery that is still unfolding. But all of us have, you know, kids who are so precious to us. And I'm grateful that your sister recovered, and also for what you were able to do for Elizabeth Smart. We all remember that story so well as well. So I'm glad that you shared that with us, because I think it just helps people to understand where you're coming from. And I want to get to the two sort of newsy topics this week with that as a backdrop and hear what you think about them. Because so now we have the news that Republicans have secured a majority in the House of Representatives. That number's at least 218. It looks like it may go a little bit higher, 220, 221 in that neighborhood. So that's the backdrop of leadership and governing that we'll have on Capitol Hill, Republicans in charge of the House. Senate will have the ability to be a majority based on the numbers that we're at right now. We don't know how Georgia will go in that runoff. But we just heard from Jim Jordan, who will head up the Judiciary Committee in the House, and Jim Comer, who will also be part of this investigation, another member of Congress, who's in a leadership position now as well. So they say that they are going to investigate Hunter Biden, that they have evidence that there could be wire fraud, violations of the ability to work with foreign governments, which is known as FARA, money laundering, tax evasion, and that they're going to focus on that and also try to figure out what now President Biden, then Vice President Biden, knew and how, to what extent he may or may not have been involved in these activities with China and Ukraine and other countries. So what do you think about the fact that they are making this a focus, and tell us about your own connection to this story?
Yeah, I think it's overdue. The Congress, you know, there was a time, Martha, I think that you had both sides willing to investigate something as, you know, significant and substantial as the Hunter Biden case. You know, you add to the list of potential crimes, conspiracy, and you add to the list several of the corruption statutes, because if it does involve a family, a group of people that are working together to facilitate a pay-to-play scheme, and at its heart, it seems to boil down to access. You know, there are texts and emails that go back and forth where Hunter is proclaiming the access to his father that he's given, that he's delivered meetings, that he's delivered opportunities for, you know, heads of state to meet with him. And then when you see those rare glimpses of Hunter kind of losing it and getting upset at having, you know, provided the family so much income, and he outlines what he's been doing, you really start to question whether or not this is a corrupt family, and how long has it been corrupt? And sadly, it is the Congress. If the Department of Justice is not willing to do it, which you watch how fast they'll act on FTX, for example, that we're going to talk about, in contrast to what they are doing, what they've done with Hunter Biden. You look how fast they're able to mobilize on certain cases that they really want to, and others. And you know, I mean, my years in the Department of Justice are not, you know, insignificant, to where I observed the Department of Justice dragging their feet on cases that it wanted to drag its feet on. And so I hope Jim Jordan can do it. The problem is, it's an open investigation. DOJ and the FBI are going to not cooperate. They are going to stall, and they're going to, you know, try to confuse and resist any effort that they make. And that subpoena, by the way, that they're going to send, that Jim Jordan's going to send, it's the Department of Justice that gets to decide whether or not they would hold someone accountable for refusing to honor the subpoena. And so, you know, I'm encouraged that they're going to, but unless you control the Department of Justice and the Congress, you may not have an ability to enforce the oversight ability of the committee.
I think that's one of the things that frustrates Americans so much when they watch this happen, because what we will likely see is a hearing and some tough questioning coming from Republicans about what happened here. Because I think when you combine the situation with the business dealings that Hunter Biden and his colleagues had with China, with Ukraine, Kazakhstan was also involved in these relationships. And you layer on top of that, that this was the vice president's son and the drug use that we know he was engaged in at that time. And it's quite easy to imagine how the leadership in these countries, I think most people consider China an adversary. The president has said it's a, you know, competitor. You can see how quickly they would see that that would be useful to them, that this person is compromised by his personal behavior. So that's, you know, it doesn't matter that Hunter Biden does drugs. It's sad. Many families have family members who've gone through these things. Right. What matters is that this person was also doing business with countries that his father was overseeing as vice president at that same time, which obviously puts him in a compromised position. But I think most Americans get so frustrated that they'll watch this hearing. And then afterwards, they're likely to say, because of the reasons you just mentioned, you know, so what? No one's ever held accountable. It never goes anywhere. And I think as Americans, it just cuts to people's sense of right and wrong and makes them lose faith.
Yeah, I could not agree more with everything you just outlined, Martha. I think it's a sad state where we're at. If you look at, you know, when I was in Washington, D.C., the very first briefing I received, because I was working in national security, was the vulnerability of all of us in the United States that may have interactions with the Chinese and that they were targeting us. And, you know, this was, you know, just after 9/11, that we were concerned about the Middle East, but we still had incredible concerns about China. For people that have been working in national security, Hunter Biden is, you know, he is the largest of red flags that we could have presented. But then you understand that he's actually receiving money from the Chinese, and they're not just going to freely give that without meeting the demands that they have and without being vulnerable. He was such a security risk to this country that it is shocking that we have not outlined a better way forward to go after and pursue the vulnerability. But it does make you feel as an American that there are certain elite people and families that will avoid investigation and prosecution. And it really hurts when you see that, you know, over a third of one in three people in the United States have a criminal record now. So everyday average citizens.
That's incredible.
Yeah, they're not getting an exception. They're not avoiding, accountability. But for those at the top, it feels like they are.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Now, will you have any connection, be involved in this investigation in any way?
You know, I hope I'm able to, you know, have the opportunity to testify in the House hearing. I have been contacted by Jim Jordan's office, and we've had some discussions. I think the broader picture that they're really looking for is to see if the FBI is compromised or if they, do they need to be held accountable? And Hunter Biden is just one area, I think, that they're looking at. So I would expect that the hearing is going to take a real close look at the consistency of decision making in pursuing investigations. And, I'm happy to serve. If I'm called, I'll serve. And if they want me to come in and testify at the hearing, that'd be great. And, in a lot of ways, I wish I had been the U.S. attorney at the time the Hunter Biden issue came down. Yeah.
we have, you know, from the whistleblowers, there's the quote from someone in the FBI about the Hunter Biden case, according to those reports, saying, well, we're not touching this, essentially. I'm paraphrasing a bit here. We don't want to be involved in another election or be accused of being involved in another election. It's too close to the election. What do you think about those decisions that are made? Because they've been made on both sides over time.
They have. The difference on the other side was, you know, with the actual candidate themselves was the target. they don't seem to be too concerned about doing that with Donald Trump as the candidate. I believe they'll continue to pursue that investigation. And so you still see a sense of inconsistency. Hunter Biden is the son of certainly the candidate for office. And I understand that issue that it came up under Comey and how that was handled, no question it was poorly handled. And the sensitivity of DOJ is not surprising. However, with Hunter, his father was not running, has not been running for office for the last 2 years. 2024 is out there a ways. That case could be put together, buttoned up, presented to the grand jury. The indictment or a resolution and plea agreement could be done. And largely with the media, being friendly, they would be able to move on from that decision. So it doesn't really add up that they have, I hear the whistleblowers saying that. I hear that they are hunting and wanting to push it down the road. I think that's a convenient, convenient way to make the decision seem plausible.
In the minutes that we have left, Brett, I want to ask you your thoughts on this case, which is just snowballing into an enormous situation with Sam Bankman-Fried, mm-hmm. whose crypto company, FTX, has now been declared bankrupt. He says that was one of the biggest mistakes that he made, and that he's going to spend the next couple of weeks trying to get $8 billion to cover the losses by investors in his crypto company. He was, part of this group of 10 or 11 people who lived in the Bahamas, was running this company. One was his former girlfriend, who was the co-CFO of the company. And the man who has now stepped in to try to figure out these enormous losses, which really looks like a Ponzi scheme. They took the money from FTX. They moved it over to something called Alameda, which was a hedge fund. So they basically took people's deposits, their money, moved it over to the hedge fund. The hedge fund had enormous losses. And it's the shell game of trying to cover losses with people's money. And the bottom fell out from under it. And John J. Ray, who is now trying to oversee the finances of this company and was also involved in a similar situation with Enron, which many of us remember well, says that he's never seen anything like this. He said it is a complete failure of corporate controls. Never in my career have I seen such a complete failure, absence of trustworthy financial information as has occurred here. What do you make of this story, Brett?
It's fascinating to me. I've been digging into this story too, because, on the one hand, we saw this as sort of the stable genius, right? The odd, very unique individual that wears t-shirts and is brilliant and Ivy League trained and has, knowledge that is very difficult to ascertain, except if you're young and you have that sort of brain. Now, looking back, everything looks contrived and it looks immature. And not only that, it looks criminal. If his lawyers were really advising him going forward, right now, the stakes are so much higher than I think he comprehends. If his lawyers were advising him, not because they wanted to, get paid and to be lawyers on a high profile case, if I were advising him, I would tell him right now, go into authorities, tell them everything you did, outline all the lies that you made, all of the manipulation, do all of that. You might be able to get out of prison before the end of your life. The reason I say that is, the sentence comes as a result of two very important things in a case like this. One, the amount of money that is at stake. And when you get into the millions, and if a billion is still owed, then it almost automatically reaches a life sentence under the federal guidelines. But there's a section called 2B1.1. Section 2B1.1 of the sentencing guidelines outlines all of these different enhancements that may apply. And Martha, so far, he's doing every single one of those things that will get him an enhancement. He's deleting messages. He's lying and covering up. Some of the enhancements are if you use a sophisticated means to perpetrate the fraud. When he has used some of the software to actually hide what was going on financially and to you know, avoid some of the controls, that's a sophisticated means. That's an enhancement he's already, you know, getting. His when you have multiple victims, that's another enhancement. When you do anything to cover up your scheme, that's an enhancement. So there is a list of all these enhancements, and I'm watching his statements, his posts, his activity. And if he doesn't stop, he's looking at a guaranteed sentence for the rest of his life.
What about the government getting their hands on it? We're hearing about an extradition agreement between the Bahamas and the United States. I mean, it's hard to imagine a bigger flea risk than this young man at this moment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, they're probably very intensely negotiating right now. There are some countries that I have concerns about that would be very difficult. They don't see our justice system the same way. The Bahamas is not one of them. Where the Bahamas may have some exposure because they may not have had the right, you know, regulation or enforcement of some of the regulations on the company, they're gonna want to step up as well and cooperate. So I see no solace in for Mr. Bankman-Fried for being in the Bahamas right now. It doesn't look good, and if he takes off from there, it's only going to make matters worse.
Yeah, when you go through what he said to a Vox reporter, he was texting with a Vox reporter at midnight a few nights ago about, you know, messy accounting. He talks about, he says, F the regulators, which he has since said was, he says he didn't know these text messages were going to be revealed. He says messy accounting plus margin exchange. Position built up over time through, in retrospect, Luna crash was when a lot of it did. So the crazy thing that I'm learning, because I know nothing about these crypto markets intentionally, but I'm digging in, is that they've all been bailing each other out, right? They've all been lending each other assets because this is such a tricky business. But then he says, but messy accounting, I didn't realize full size of it until a few weeks ago. So if you're prosecuting him, all of this is admissible, I would imagine, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. All of it, all of his statements. I also read that he was adding tweets and then deleting other tweets so that it didn't look like his tweet count was going down. And that, you know, all of that is an effort to cover up. And I frequently tell people, the cover-up is the most useful evidence for a prosecutor because it's the only evidence that shows that there was some bad intent. So all of that goes to a jury, and it's the actual cover-up evidence that becomes more important in a case if you're going to convict someone on a white-collar case, because juries struggle to know whether or not, you know, an otherwise law-abiding citizen, a corporate citizen, a CEO, whether they're really a bad guy. So it's all the cover-up stuff that shows they're a bad guy.
Right. Now, he said, in these same text messages with this reporter at Vox, he says, you know, my whole thing is I never should have declared bankruptcy. And over the next 2 weeks, I just have to get $8 billion to give these people their money back. Is that completely delusional? Is there any opportunity for him to right this situation at this point, or is it too late?
I'm glad you highlighted that because in my 25 years in the criminal justice system, a lot of it has been with white collar criminal cases, and almost every single case of fraud, the perpetrator believed they could still get the money back. Mm-hmm. They get such a heightened sense of themselves when they were at their peak. You know, and they were, you know, investing, or they had other people's money and the ability they had to generate more money. I think they believe that once they get, caught. And out of hundreds of cases, I have one case where the individual was able to come up with the money prior to the indictment.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to do a part two of this because there's also the whole other part of the investigations that are going on in the Department of Justice, and also the links to Democratic lawmakers and questions about whether or not the regulators were going easy on him because he was a big Dem donor. So we'll pick that up another time. But Brett, I really want to thank you. It's such a pleasure to have more than 3.5 minutes with you that we get on the show. So I really want to thank you for your time today. And as always, we're grateful to you and for all that you have done, and look forward to seeing you on the show and in the future here as well. Many thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.